This way.
Big day, Cato. You finally get to meet Jai Stevenson.
Hopeton's disaffected youth. Can't wait. A week ago, I was sent to Hopeton to tidy up a headless corpse washed up on the beach. File it and forget it. Simple. My last chance to get my career as a detective back on track. Only the corpse turns out to be one of the Chinese contractors flown into the new nickel mine. And then up steps one of his mates and says he brained him with a fence post. Convenient? Too convenient. The confession doesn't stand up anyway. The head, when we find it, has a bullet in it. But it's the murder of my mate Jim Buckley on Friday night that's really getting to me. Because I spread the rumour that drugs gangs were behind the headless corpse. And now it looks like that rumour might have got Jim killed.
Crime Down Under. Crime Cut by Alan Carter. Dramatised by Adrian Bean. Episode 2.
So you told Jai he'd be held back after school for disruptive behaviour, and now he's in the lockers holding a knife to his own throat?
That's right. Just your average Tuesday in Hopeton.
Hello, Jai. What's happening?
Ask my bitch teacher. Who's a chink?
That's not nice language for a 10-year-old to use, Jai.
I'm 11 next month.
Oh, good. Well, I'm a detective.
You don't scare me.
Look, why don't you give me the knife, Jai? You don't want to hurt anyone.
Gonna kill myself. That'll show her. Show you all.
Well, wouldn't it be better to talk about what's getting you down, Jai?
Thank you, Cato. I'm dealing with this. Remember that time I took you for a ride in the cop car, Jai? Let you work the siren, all that stuff?
Wow, cool.
Well, how about I let you look at this?
Your taser.
Your taser?
You can hold it, Jai. If we keep it a secret, just between us. Need you to put the knife down first, though. What do you say, Jai? Good kid.
Can I have it now?
Sure. Hey, don't snatch!
Oh, crap.
You did what?
He had a knife. And it was accidental. Anyway, I only had it on warp factor 2.
It's still 50,000 volts? Christ! You're lucky he's okay. D.I. Hutchins. What? No comment. No! Channel 9 want to know if the tasering of this kid has anything to do with the murder of Jim Buckley or the body on the beach. Like I haven't got enough on my bloody plate already. Now, Keith Stevenson ring a bell?
Yes.
He was on the phone to me half an hour ago, hopping mad, because not only did Captain Kirk here nearly kill his son, but you were on his land without permission, looking through one of the caravans his bloody contractors live in.
The conditions he keeps those contractors in, you wouldn't expect animals to live in. We should be booking him.
But what were you doing there in the first place?
Look, I was looking for evidence that might help with the Hai Chen murder. We've got a head and a body that match up, but we need DNA to prove they belong to Hai Chen.
And did you find anything?
Yes. Clothing and a comb with hairs. We're just waiting for forensics to give us a result.
So it was worth all the aggro.
It's not that easy, sir. Getting the truth out of these Chinese contractors is difficult.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. The only Chinese cop on my books knows speaky the lingo. Has that interpreter come down from Albany yet?
Not yet.
And you're suspended. Get out of my office.
Don't you think with everything going...
Now!
Sir?
Not you, Cato. Shut the door. Thought you'd be interested to know. Forensics have come up with some useful evidence on Justin Woodward. Traces of crystal meth. And a bag containing a couple of hundred tabs of ecstasy tucked in amongst the coffee bags in his van.
So Jim Buckley was right?
Yeah. But it's still not enough for me to pin Jim's murder on the slimy little bastard.
And you're telling me this because...
Come on, Cato. You know I can't be seen to get my hands dirty. But if somebody else was to... Well, that would change a lot of things, wouldn't it?
I hear what you're saying. I need to get on with the Hai Chen case. Sir. Day 6 of an investigation that should have taken 2 at most. Only a matter of days before Hutchins has me off the case. Just a few days to solve 2 murders and to prove I'm still the detective I used to be. or it's back to Stock Squad chasing cows and sheep around the outback.
Right. Grace, what have we got?
Chen's contract of employment. Temporary skilled migrant for the duration of the contract, 2 years.
Back at the incident room, Grace and I take a closer look at the official paperwork, along with the stuff I trawled from Hai Chen's caravan this morning.
Did you ever catch up with Billy Mather about those lights out of Starbo?
Oh, sorry, boss. He's an elusive man now, Billy. I'll try again.
Good. Someone had to dispose of Hai Chen's body in the sea near Starbo. Maybe Billy saw something after all. Guan Yu was on a good whack. Adding up to $43,000 a year. Ah, but minus deductions of accommodation, uniform, agency fees, daily travel to and from the mine, Keith Stevenson was taking a substantial slice.
Guan said he and Chen argued about money. Maybe he thought he was being fleeced and blamed Chen.
Why Chen?
Maybe Chen was the gangmaster? Stevenson pays the contractors, but he'll need someone on the Chinese end to find the workers, sort out travel and visas, you know. Maybe Chen was taking his wedge and Guan didn't like it.
Possible. But why is Guan lying? He says he killed Hai Chen by hitting him over the head with a lump of 4x2. But the PATH report says Chen was shot in the head.
The rest of the belongings is the usual stuff. Letters home, photos of kids, wife. A family wedding, Hai Chen in the middle with the blushing bride, and...
Hello? Who's this at the back?
Me hit Hai Chen, yes.
This crap. We know Hai Chen was shot.
No.
He was shot. So how about you cut the crap and tell us the truth?
No speak English.
Oh.
I show Guan Yu the wedding photo.
That's you, isn't it? Let me guess, the bride looks a bit like you, so I'd say Hai Chen was your brother-in-law, right?
He doesn't answer, but the look on his face speaks volumes.
So why didn't you tell us this before? I know, because this is why you argued. He wasn't just ripping off his co-workers, he was ripping off his family. Look, I don't believe you killed Hai Chen. I believe you had an argument, maybe had a fight, decked him maybe... And I believe that Hai Chen's body disappeared. But if you're protecting someone, you better think twice, because you'll be looking at serious time inside an Australian jail for murder, and I personally don't think you deserve that.
No speak English.
Come on.
The clock's ticking, and a man can only chase one wild goose at a time. Luckily, I knew a good cop with plenty of time on her hands.
Hi, this is Tess.
Hi, Tess, it's
me. I can't get to the phone right now, but please leave a message. And remember, anything you say may be taken down and used as evidence against you.
Hi, Tess, I guess you're out.
Who's it?
Oh, it's Kato.
Rack off.
Are you still in bed?
No.
Have you got any decent coffee?
What?
I'll bring some.
No, Kato, please.
Afternoon.
Come in, then. What have you got there?
CCTV tapes from the bar where Jim Buckley was drinking the night he was killed. I thought that seeing as you're at a loose end...
Thor Hutchins was running that case.
Yeah, but Hutchins is determined to pin the murder on Justin.
And why not? He's the only suspect.
Small matter of a lack of evidence?
I've never stopped Mick Hutchins in the past, as you well know.
Yeah?
Well, I am sure that if you hand in your homework again all neat and tidy, he'll magic you up your old job, won't he?
Not gonna happen again, Tess.
Sorry. Oh, God, I'm really sorry I did... I hate sitting around the house, and what with Melissa...
I'll put the coffee on.
After a shower and a couple of cups of superior coffee, Tess is sitting at the table in a dressing gown, ready to talk.
So,
What's happening with your not-so-open-and-shut headless corpse case?
I thought we were getting somewhere. But Guan's confession doesn't add up. And the Chinese don't have access to guns or boats, both of which Guan would have needed. They're totally dependent on Stevenson for everything.
Well, Keith Stevenson wasn't always the pillar of the Hopeton community. He knocked around with some Perth gangs back in the day. Bit of a thug and standover man. He dodged a murder charge when he killed an American sailor in a fight. But he's kept his nose clean since then. Just admit, this coffee's all right.
Stick with me, kid. That doesn't go down well. Too intimate.
Tell me about the mine. Yeah, they're digging for nickel, right?
Yeah. They say the stuff's worth about $20,000 a ton. Each container of the stuff is worth about $250,000. This is one container in one day. Do the sums for a week, a month, a year.
Monopoly money.
Yeah, well, people need mobiles, tablets, TVs. They say that mine cost $2 billion to establish. Means it's here to stay.
And someone like Keith Stevenson's gonna make sure he gets a slice of it.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting this close to Tess in a dressing gown, the memories come flooding back.
How's the wife?
Jane? Oh, fine. Yeah, good.
Been married long?
7 years. Separated for 2. You never...
Kids?
A boy, 6. Jacob, well, Jake.
Missing him, I expect.
Yeah.
And Jane?
It's complicated.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, why are you here instead of trying to work things out with Jane and Jake? It's what you want, isn't it?
Truth is, I don't know what I want. I'm still no closer to knowing who shot Chen and why, but I am sure that Stevenson fits into the picture somehow. It isn't hard to identify the Stevenson McMansion, as Tess calls it, a 9-meter yacht parked up on the drive next to a Hilux UV, and baby boomer Eagle Rock coming from the back garden. Could this be my opportunity to set a trap? About 30 guests standing around the pool. A few heads turn as I make my entrance. One or two do subtle double takes, not expecting to see one of Keith's Chinese contractors turn up for the barbie. Keith Stevenson, on the other hand, just stands and stares.
Mr. Kwong. Philip, isn't it? Can I get you a beer, mate?
No thanks, Mr. Stevenson. This is business, not pleasure. Police business.
Well, maybe we should step inside the house, Mr. Kwong.
Nah, I'm good here, thanks.
So, state your business.
Nice place, Keith. Not bad for an ex-thug and standover man. It is ex, isn't it?
Fair go, mate. Is this what you call police business? You're on my property, you're insulting me in front of my guests. It's just not on.
Your employees. The ones who live in the caravans in Paddy's Field. How much do you charge them to live in that squalor?
Well, if they choose to live like pigs, that's their business. I'm just a landlord doing them a favour. This is a boom town. Accommodation is at a premium.
150 per man per week. 4 men to a caravan half the size of your bathroom. That's $600 a week. That would get you a fair-sized house, even at inflated Hopeton prices. How am I doing?
You sure you're a cop? You sound like a shop steward for your chinky mates.
Then $50 a week each for transport. That's the company minibus. A one-off payment for overalls, 2 sets, 100 each. Then there's the return airfare from China, agent's commission, etc., etc.
Well, look, nice as it is to chat, this is my wife's birthday.
They think they're on a good wicket getting $500 a week in the hand. But they're not getting that, are they? After all your deductions, they'll be lucky to scrape $250 for 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. That's what, $4 an hour? They'd be better off working at a fast food joint. And if they complain, you can just send them back and get another batch.
Have you finished?
And the really pathetic thing is you don't even need their money. The value of the contracts on your books makes you a rich man either way, but you have to have it all because you can.
Get out. Now.
Once a standover man. Is that why Hai Chen was killed? The others found out about the extra deductions. They thought it was Chen ripping them off, but it was you all along.
Still the standover man. A quick headbutt and then Stevenson has his hand on the back of my head, holding my face over the barbecue. I can feel my face beginning to burn.
You listen to me, Jackie Chan. You keep away from me and my family.
Come on, kick these a call.
You keep your nose out, or next time I will flame grill you, you bastard. Do you hear me? Now, piss off.
As a conversation point, the scene takes some beating. It's what the Australian chattering class is called a real barbecue stopper. I need to clean myself up and work out what Keith Stevenson's really hiding. But as I put my key in the lock, the adjacent door opens and out steps...
Dio Hutchins.
Hey?
Ah, hello, Kato. There you go. What's the other bloke look like? You want to tell me about it?
Not particularly, sir.
Fair dues. Right. Oh, see you in the morning.
Sir?
Yeah?
What are you doing in Jim Buckley's room? If you don't mind me asking.
Nothing. Had a phone call from Jim's missus, couple of personal items she was keen to make sure I didn't go walkabout. You know what people are like.
Yeah, I do.
Ouch. I heard the barbie went well.
Yeah.
Come on in, Bruiser.
Yeah. So, what did you want to show me, Tess?
This CCTV footage. Look, there's Jim, sitting on his Todd, eating a bar meal, drinking beer, just after 7 p.m.
Why does he keep looking that way, off screen? Bar TV, maybe?
Could be. An hour later, and that's Justin Woodward and his girlfriend leaving. They walk straight past Jim without so much as a sideways look.
Before smashing his skull with a rock a few hours later.
Yeah. But this is where it gets really interesting. At exactly 8:46 p.m., about 4 hours before Jim Buckley gets killed, he ups and leaves. And 12 minutes later...
Yeah, he comes back in, we know this. That's where he made the phone call to the reporter in Adelaide, yes? Why is that so interesting?
Just look. At 11:49, Jim leaves for the last time, and here, coming up, from the direction Jim has been looking in, which we thought was the TV, look who's following him out.
Tess hits the pause button, and even though it's slightly blurred, there is no doubt about the short, wiry man following Jim outside.
Billy Mather.
Our reclusive man at Starvation Bay.
Coincidence?
Maybe. You're the detective.
Likes his peace and quiet, doesn't he?
Bit of a hermit is our Billy. Free spirit. The outback is full of them.
Reckon he's in?
Lights on in the caravan. Only one way to find out.
This Land Rover. It's Billy's, isn't it?
Yeah, why?
I could have sworn it passed us on the way here.
You sure?
It's distinctive. Classic green. 1970s vintage.
Yeah, maybe.
I watch Grace as she walks to the caravan. A washing line flutters gently in the moonlight. The smell of recent cooking, eggs, meat. Something else I can't place.
Billy, you in? It's Grace Fisher, the cop from Hopi, remember?
Try the door.
All right.
What happens next seems to be in slow motion. I see Grace put her hand on the door handle. Turn and push. Then, even though I'm still a good 20 feet behind Grace, as the door swings open, I hear a rasping, scraping sound, and the strange smell is suddenly stronger. Too late. I realize what it is. Gas. When I wake up the next morning, I'm in Esperance Hospital. Nobody will tell me anything about Grace. Finally, I learn that she suffered second-degree burns to her upper body and may lose her sight. I'm okay, if a bit singed. The blast just knocked me unconscious. When they let me out, I'm driven straight to Starvation Bay and the caravan, which is now nothing more than a twisted, blackened heap. The fire guys reckon the blast radiated out from the stove. It looked like an accident. The smell of gas would support that. Then I catch sight of something fluttering on the ground. A charred fragment of tape stuck to the edge of what remains of the caravan door.
Forensics? Forensics, over here! Can you photograph this and bag it?
And Billy's green Land Rover is nowhere to be seen.
DSC Kwong here. Do me a favour. Put out an alert on the network for a Billy Mather. Early 60s, slight build, short silver grey hair. He's driving a distinctive green 1970s Land Rover. The Regi's on file.
This morning, I'm able to announce that a 23-year-old man has been charged with the murder of Detective Sergeant James Buckley. Justin Anthony Woodward has been taken to Albany and will appear before a magistrate later today.
You arrested him previously and let him go. What changed?
Significant new forensic evidence has come to light, which will be presented in due course. I think I can say with some confidence that thanks to the hard work and cooperation shown by my team from Albany and the Hopetoun police, this case is now closed.
And what about the body on the beach? Any news there?
Investigations are ongoing, but I'd like to say that our thoughts are primarily with Jim Buckley's family at this difficult time, and we
extend them... What about this explosion at Starvation Bay? Two officers injured. Any connection with the other cases, or just a bizarre coincidence?
I've got no comment on that. Thank you.
DA Hutchins, just a
minute.
Detective
Inspector Hutchins, thank you.
Over here, Detective Inspector Hutchins.
Come in, Kato. Shut the door.
You're leaving town?
You're getting the plane to Perth tonight. Jim Buckley's funeral day after tomorrow. You'll be there?
I'll try. Still got a case to solve. Congratulations, by the way.
Hey?
Just saw you live on Channel 9. Significant new forensic evidence. The Buckley case charging Justin.
Oh, yeah. Forensics found one of Jim's hairs on Justin's clothes.
That was fortunate. And a motive?
I reckon it's pretty obvious, Kato. Buckley found drugs in Justin Woodward's coffee van. He was blackmailing Justin. Justin had enough.
Well, you know what people are like.
I do, Kato.
So you wanted to see me, sir?
Yeah. Your headless trunk. This case has dragged on long enough. I want it wrapped up.
Me too. Only I don't have a killer yet.
I thought your man Guan Yu confessed.
But it doesn't make sense. Nobody's mentioned a gun at the camp, and we still don't know how Haichen's body ended up in the sea. The workers are dependent on Stevenson to get around, and it's miles to Starvo
yadda,
Bay.
Yadda, yadda. It's a right dog's dinner, Kato. Nobody gives a toss about it except you. Why don't we just send the lying, squabbling bastards back home and close the book on it?
I can't think of an answer that doesn't involve airy fairy notions like truth, justice, right and wrong. So I keep quiet.
I want this whole Chinese thing sewn up, all right? Soon as Jim Buckley's in the ground, I'm pulling the plug, final.
Fancy a beer?
Shh. I'd say you've had a few already. You better come in. Come on.
Sure you don't want a drink?
What's going on, Kato?
Hutchins wants me to close the book on the Haichen murder. Like a man's life means nothing. I have to walk away again.
Kato?
Yeah?
I hope you'll take this the way I mean it. But you really are a gutless, self-obsessed bastard.
Don't beat around the bush, Tess. Say what you mean.
I don't see what your problem is. All you've ever done is walk away. You ran away from me because you were gutless. You rolled over for Hutchins and landed yourself in trouble. Same reason. And you're only hanging on to your crappy job in Stock Squad because you haven't got the guts to leave. Well, say something for Christ's sake.
Well, you seem to have it worked out already.
Grow up, Kato. You helped put away an innocent man back then because you did the wrong thing. But what's really eating you is that you got busted when others didn't. Now you're wallowing in this bitter martyrdom crap. You can't bear to think that you're not the golden boy on the posters anymore. Well, it doesn't matter who else got away with it. You did wrong. So take it on the chin and move on instead of infecting everyone else with your poison.
That's me told.
I,
I think you better go.
Right. Whoa.
I've got you. You okay?
Tess.
Why did you go, Kato? What was so wrong with us?
I'm an idiot. I don't know. I'm sorry.
This isn't a good idea. The last thing I need now is a nostalgic fling with Kato Kwong. However tempting.
Do you mean that?
You should be thinking about your marriage.
Too late for that.
Is it?
Tess is white, of course. I should step forward. Like in the old recruiting poster. Step forward, not walk away.
Hey, mate, watch where you're going.
I can't get Hai Chin's face out of my mind. Someone has to find out what really happened to him. And what about Jim Buckley? I know Hutchins' cock and bull story about Justin will probably fly with a jury desperate to convict a drug dealer. But can I live with that? No. Tess is right. This time I can't just walk away. Step forward. And who knows? Maybe I'll even talk to Jane. When I get back to my hotel, the message light on my answer phone is flashing. Could it be Tess?
Dear Kwong, sorry to call so late, but I thought you'd want to know.
But it isn't Tess. It's forensics. Turns out the red paper I found that Billy made this caravan is part of a matchbox. Tape the striking strip to one edge of the caravan door and a bundle of matches to the other. Leave the gas on, and when the door is opened, hey presto, a crude but potentially very effective booby trap. Suddenly I'm stone cold sober. Billy Mather isn't the harmless old hermit Grace had him down for. But why try and kill us? Where is he? It's the middle of the night, and I've got one bleary-eyed Guan Yu and one annoyed interpreter either side of a table. I can finally get some detailed answers out of Guan Yu. And surprise, surprise, who's he end up pointing the finger at?
Mr. Stevenson.
Mr. Guan says it was Mr. Stevenson.
Seems Grace's gangmaster theory was right. Guan says Hai Chen collected $50 of cash from each of his Chinese workmates, 15 in total, making $750 a week on top of Chen's own wages. Not bad. But enough for a motive? Why'd he argue with Hai Chen that night?
Mr. Guan says he did not have the money. He needed it for his family. His daughter is ill with leukemia. Hai Chen chastised him loudly in front of his colleagues and slapped him. So Mr. Guan picked up the nearest weapon he could find.
The fatal fence post, with Hai Chen's hair and blood all over it. Guan also insists that Chen's gone in the morning when they wake up. Then he says that Keith Stevenson turns up, telling Guan that Chen is dead. And if Guan wants to continue sending money home for his sick daughter, that's the story he needs to stick to. Oh, if only we had a Chinese translator a week ago. Thursday morning before sunup, we're outside Keith Stevenson's house. With Hutchins out of town for Jim Buckley's funeral, I've scraped together a few local plots and forensics for a dawn raid. And Tess. I know I'm asking for more trouble bringing Tess along, what with her being suspended. But she's the most experienced cop left in the area, and I'm desperate, running out of time.
What the hell do you lot want now? It's 5 a.m.
Let's do this inside, Mr. Stevenson. Working fast, flashing what I hope might look like a search warrant, I cuff Stevenson and leave Tess and the forensics guys to do their work. Turn around, please. Stay there. We'll need to search your boat. I believe I brushed up against it when I left your barbecue. My blood may be on it.
Bull. What do you really want the boat for?
It'll help us build a complete picture of events for an assault charge against a police officer.
Oh, this is a joke. My lawyer's going to have your gonads on toast, Jackie Chan.
Up at the top of the stairs, I spot young Jai, the disaffected youth of Hopeton, standing in his Bart Simpson's boxes, wide-eyed, taking in the scene.
Kato! Something for you in the garage!
Chainsaw. Head removal for the use of.
Any blood?
Some. It's been clean recently, but this is blood.
Good. What about the boat and the 4x4?
Forensics are all over them.
Any sign of a firearm?
No.
Oh, keep looking. If we don't find one, Hutchins will have a field day.
Whoa! Oh. Quick! Inside the house!
The disaffected youth has disappeared from sight, but I can see the barrel of a 2-2 rifle sticking out from the bedroom door, and a wounded cop lying sprawled at the top of the stairs. Tess unclips her holster, draws her gun and moves towards the stairs.
Jai, put the gun down.
Tess, get back here.
But she ignores me, eyes fixed on the rifle, and lifts a foot onto the first stair.
Jai, it's me, Tess, remember?
Of course I remember, bitch.
Oh, get these cuffs off me and I'll go upstairs and sort him out.
No way.
I don't want my son getting shot. I'm the only one he's going to listen to. You've already lost one cop. Do you want to lose her as well?
I said no.
Tess is nearly at the upper floor level, taking a moment to check on the wounded cop before switching her focus back to the gun barrel.
Jai, I can see from here he's still breathing, but we need to get him to a hospital real quick.
Let him die. I don't care.
Tess climbs another stair, moving slowly and steadily. She's just a few centimetres from the line of fire.
I've got you in my sight.
Oh, look, I can end this. Just let me talk to him, please.
All right. We both know why we're here, don't we?
The alleged assault.
The real reason. Come on, Keith. Your son's in real danger of dying today.
Get back!
Oh, you're a nasty piece of work, you are. You turn the screws at a time like this, you're bargaining with my boy's life? You're a bloody disgrace.
I'm just trying to bring this situation to an end.
Oh, shoot him. I mean it.
All right. All right, I did the bloody chink. Now let me talk to my boy. Thank you. Jai, mate, it's your dad. I'm coming up.
No, stay away.
Look, there's no need for all this, Jai, mate. Let's call it a day, eh?
But, Dad!
Throw the gun down.
Keith Stevenson, I'm arresting you for the murder of Hai Chen.
2:27 p.m. Tuesday, September 19th. Interview with Mr. Keith Stevenson. Present, Mr. Stevenson's solicitor, Miss Cooper, Senior Sergeant Tess Maguire, and Detective Senior Constable Philip Kwong.
I was out that night in the truck, spotlight with Jai. We do it a lot. The kid enjoys it. Bagged a few rabbits, fox and emu. Kept the emu for the cat. She loves it.
Keith Stevenson seems overly calm for someone who has just confessed to murder, even if it was to save his son's life.
I got a call from Chen. Must have been about 11, 11.30, Thursday night.
Where from? Paddy's Field is out of range. No mobile signal.
Well, he'd walk to the airstrip. There's a signal there. That's where we'd arranged to meet.
What time did you get to the airstrip?
About midnight. Chen was in a right state, blood all over his head, shivering and mumbling. He'd obviously been in a scrap. And he started having a go at me, babbling in Chinese, crazy.
There was a struggle.
Yeah, like I say, he was going bloody berserk. And he made a grab for the rifle and it went off.
Accidentally.
That's what I said. Hit him in the head, end of story. That's what I meant by did the chink. I was responsible.
So how did you dispose of the body?
Put him in the 4x4, drove to Starvation Bay, took him out in the boat. Went out a few miles, cut him up on the deck with a chainsaw, chucked him over the side, hosed the deck down.
Chen's clothes, wallet, phone?
Over the side, into the drink.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Stevenson. That should be enough to be going on with. Interview suspended, 2:48 p.m.
Black clouds billow in the western sky as Tess and I take a breather outside the station.
Funny, isn't it? Hai Chen, an itinerant Chinese worker brought in to fill a labour shortage. Not very welcome and only barely to be tolerated. Just like me.
Hilarious. So Stevenson and Chen were splitting the rip-off proceeds 50-50.
And Chen was threatening to spill unless he got whatever it was he wanted. That's what I think. I suppose Stevenson thought anyone would care enough about another Chinese worker till I turned up.
And what about the kid? Don't tell me you haven't thought Jai might have killed Hai Chen.
Sure. The kid's shown himself to be dangerous with a gun. Keith's probably taking the rap for him. Turning out to be a better dad than I've ever shown myself to be.
It looks like it's all wrapped up then.
There should be celebratory drinks or something. The case of Flipper the Headless Torso was solved. It was Keith Stevenson and or Little Joy with the gun at the airstrip.
You can tell Hutchins at the funeral tomorrow. Still time to make the last plane.
You know, Jim was one of the good guys.
Yeah. Still trying to catch his cold case killer. Suppose that's one more bad guy I'll get away now.
He was always scribbling away in that notebook. Hang on.
What? Where are you going?
I'll be back.
Thanks, Pam.
I was just about to start cleaning his room. What with that Justin Woodward being charged for the murder.
Sergeant Buckley was my partner. I just wanted to take a quick look, you know? Old time's sake.
Okay. But I need to have it ready in an hour. Wedding this weekend.
The room is a mirror image of my own, but I know what I'm looking for. Jim's notebook. The notebook is practically falling apart. Stuffed full of newspaper cuttings and notes about Davy Arthurs, the killer whose strange predilection for bludgeoning and then electrocuting mothers and children had made Jim leave the force and emigrate to Australia. The newspaper cutting that first alerted Jim to the possibility that Davy Arthurs might also have made a new life for himself down under. Police today announced a $200,000 reward in a bid to catch a man who allegedly murdered his wife and three children in Adelaide in 1987. The victims were apparently beaten to death with a hammer and then electrocuted. Homicide detectives have released a photo-fit image to show how the prime suspect would look 21 years after the killings. And there it is, staring right out at me. The suspected killer as he might look today. A fleshy, bald, and big-nosed approximation of none other than Billy Mather. Did Jim see Billy in the pub, come back here to double-check the photo, and then return to confirm his suspicions? Did Billy realize he'd been recognized and kill Jim before he could do anything about it?
Hi, Tess.
HQ's been trying to get you. They've traced Billy Mather's Land Rover to the caravan park at Esperance.
You're kidding.
The driver's booked into cabin 21, but under a different name, Stuart Miller. You okay?
Yeah. On my way to Esperance. Tell HQ to send whoever they can to meet me there.
But on the drive to Esperance, the awful reality of my situation is as plain and never-ending as the road ahead of me. What am I doing? Chasing an aging pom who in all likelihood will be gone by the time I get to yet another sad caravan park in this sad, empty country. I was finished. Tess had seen it, clear as day. I needed to get back to Perth, to my family, even if it was only shared custody every other weekend. Let Buckley's killer get away again? To quote D.R. Hutchins, this was a right dog's dinner. And then, emerging from the rain, coming towards me, a green Land Rover coming directly at me. I feel my wheels locking and see a row of fence posts heading towards the windscreen. And the last thing I remember is the stomach-churning feeling of weightlessness as the car starts to roll into the ditch and the horizon flips.
Wake up! Wake up, boy! That's better! You're alive! You and your mate, Buckley. You don't know when to stop sticking your nose in, do you?
Why? Why kill him? You could have just disappeared. You've done it before.
Nah, things were closing in. I needed a diversion. Your body on the beach provided that.
Why do you do it? The women, the kids, the bashing and the electrocuting.
I was just seeing if it worked the first time. Me little invention. Just curious, really. After that, it became a kind of signature. Like on a work of art, you know what I mean? Anyway, enough small talk. You got a lovely lass here. Lovely little one and all.
Slowly, my eyes focus onto the photo he's holding up. The one from my wallet. Jane and Jake at the beach. Both smiling when we were happy.
What's their names?
My blood runs cold. I close my eyes and concentrate. Try to think of a plan, anything, but nothing comes. When I open them again, Billy's hand is raised, holding a tire lever.
Bye-bye.
And then I throw myself at him. Not to save Jane and Jake or even myself, but just to bite back and do something good for once. Three days later, on a lovely sunny Sunday morning, I'm saying goodbye to Tess.
So Jim Buckley really was onto something. What turns a man into an evil monster like that?
Bad blood or bad home. You expose any kid to violence and abuse, don't be surprised when it comes out in nasty ways years later. Which reminds me, keep an eye on Jai Stevenson, won't you?
I'll try. Come here. Bye, Kato.
Bye, Tess.
Made any big decisions lately?
Kind of. I'm thinking of chucking the job in.
Really?
Really. Probably. Maybe.
Never change.
Actually, Hutchins called. Word on the street is Stock Squad is getting a chop. Budget cuts. He offered me a job back on his new squad in Perth.
Ah, let me guess. So long as you keep shtum about him fixing the evidence against Justin.
You know him so well.
And you said...
I told him to stuff it.
Great. Feel good?
Yeah, it does.
Well, if you fancy being a beach bum, kept man and occasional sex slave, drop me a line. If I haven't found Mr. Wright by then, I might still be open to offers.
I might take you up on that. Give my love to Melissa.
I will.
And tell Grace she'll always have a place in my heart. She'll understand.
Okay.
Bye, Tess.
It feels like the rain has washed away the last few weeks. The ugly side of Hopeton. The greed, exploitation, drugs, sleaze, and brutality. Just as well. Maybe all Hopeton needs is a nice cup of sweet tea, a cuddle, and a good night's sleep. I fancy a bit of the same myself.
Hi, Jane. No, that's all right. How's Jake? Sorry about last weekend. Yeah, I think it would be good to talk.
In episode 2 of Prime Cut, Kato Kwong was played by Andrew Leung and Tess McGuire by Christine Stephen Daly. Mick Hutchins was Richard Delane, Grace Fisher, Rio Holland, and Billy Mather, Philip Fox. Jai Stevenson was Ethan Rouse, Pam the waitress, Kerry Goodison, Justin Woodward, Leo Wong, and Keith Stevenson was played by Mark Little. Crime Down Under, Prime Cut by Alan Carter, was dramatised for radio by Adrian Bean. It was a BBC Cymru Wales production, directed by Helen Perry.